The Committee on State Government Innovation and Veterans will be in order. Today is Monday, March 7, 2011. Welcome to committee. First item on the agenda is Senate File 176, Senator Howell.
Good afternoon, Chairman.
Good afternoon. Please state your name and you may proceed.
Senator John Howell, Senate District 28. I'm here on behalf of the committee to move forward Senate File Number 176. This is a bill that would correct an error that has happened in the City of Red Wing with the Port Authority members. Currently, Port Authority members in the City of Red Wing have been paying into the PERA. In fact, I believe there's two retirees currently. It's a very small department in the City of Red Wing. The Port Authority members consist of just three members, but they have paid into this pension fund for over 25 years, and now it has come to the attention that they're not eligible to be included in PERA. So this Senate file would allow them to participate, and it would also retroactively fix the error that was inadvertently made. I have with me today Roger Seymour. He is from the City of Red Wing, and he is the Employee Service Director for the City of Red Wing, and I'll let him speak.
Chairman.
Please state your name.
Roger Seymour.
Thank you.
Chairman and committee members, the City of Red Wing since 1985, when the inception of the creation of the Port Authority, kind of a subdivision of the City of Red Wing, created the Port Authority, and the City, acting as a fiscal agent, then processed some of the pension documents for that subcommittee. At the time, they were handling their own personnel, things like that. So I'm not sure. I do have some older documents regarding, you know, how this error had occurred. None of us were around it at the time back in 1985 to know really what happened. We found some original paperwork and some paperwork that shows that the enrolling into PERA and such. We're just not sure where it happened, but we do know we do have the issue now. It was brought up last summer by PERA, and we responded to them and have seen the legislation and the statute. We've worked with PERA closely to try to address the problem, and in the meantime, we've had a cessation of contributions, they've let us continue it so that we can correct it through legislative action. And with PERA also, being that we've already been in the fund and contributing for 25 years, there'd be really no adverse effect on the fund if legislation was enacted. One of the other things, I guess currently only the City of St. Paul Port Authority qualifies under statute right now, but this legislation would ask for both past, current, and prospective port authorities to be inclusive in that. Mr. Chairman, without legislation, port authorities and current employees of the port would be left without a public retirement plan that they had expected based on their contributions for the time that they were employed by the City of Red Wing. We recognize an error was made, but believe it would be unfair to penalize those employees who were not at fault for that. So we respectfully request approved legislation, and thank you for your support. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a process question. Usually the pension-related bills all go, I think they usually start before the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement and then ultimately come to Finance Committee, state governments or wherever their jurisdiction is. Is that not functioning, or is that not a process, or what can you tell me? Because this might be a long trek if we're going to hear every single pension bill.
Absolutely.
And what's going on with the commission, et cetera.
Absolutely, Senator Olson and members. For some reason, the House has not selected yet the members on the pension committee. And because of the amount of bills that we're going to start seeing through, we wanted to get this one through. The intent would be, I believe, Senator Howe, to lay it on the table for further consideration.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Howe.
Mr. Chair and Senator, that is correct. We are concerned. I know I did speak to the Senate ranking member who's on the pension board and did you're exactly right with the process, and I think the chairman has identified the area of opportunity. So we would like to lay this on the table today for further consideration, but we do think that we need to get the committee the information so you're well aware of the concern.
So, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Olson,
is there any action taking place to try to get some movement out of the other body?
Senator Howe.
Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, I think by our sitting here today and sharing our concerns, I think that may move it forward.
Okay, thank you.
And Senator Cohen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure if this is directed at Senator Howe or somebody else, but apparently Red Wing's not alone. I think it was mentioned that Red Wing is not unique relative to the failure to include Red Wing Port Authority employees in PRA, that apparently St. Paul is the only place where that's done. So would this also kind of follow up with Senator Olson's question? Does this beg the question that we'll have a lot of other bills for other communities, and so maybe it should be more of either an omnibus bill to include other communities or, again, with an omnibus pension bill? But is the expectation that there'll be other bills for other cities around the state?
Senator Howe.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Cohen, I have not been contacted by any other port authority concerning this issue. I am aware, though, I think in Red Wing it's a little different because I think Red Wing is the only port authority where members have been contributing for 25 years. And, in fact, I believe there's a couple of members actually drawing, and, in fact, they are not qualified for PERA. And so I think the other port authorities, although I believe it was an oversight not to include all port authorities, I wouldn't be opposed to that process. I just have personally not been contacted. Maybe the Public Employees Retirement Association board, the pension board, has been contacted. I personally have not been. This was brought to me from the city of Red Wing, and of course, you know, I was the former mayor of Red Wing, so I was aware of the issue, and we've been working with to try and resolve this, but it does take it does need to be resolved by state statute. I hope that answers your question.
Senator Wigert.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I understand it's your intent to lay it over, and we need to take a big picture approach. I see the memo from Lawrence Martin is here, and there's reference to the Port Authority in Duluth, the Seaway Port, with an interest, and I'm sure there's others. But I had just one question, depending on the further direction. Mr. Chair, Senator Howe, would you be supportive of the defined benefit approach for retirement?
Senator Howe.
Mr. Chair and Senator Wigert, as it is concerned with this matter, I'd have to get back to you on my response to that.
Okay. Senator Wigger.
Mr. Chair, with the understanding which we're going to lay it over, I think it's been heard, and more later.
All right. Any other questions from anyone? Do we have any other testifiers, either for or against this? All right. Senator Daley.
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate File 176 be laid over for further consideration.
Senator Daley moves that Senate File 176 be laid over for further consideration. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevailed.
Thank you, Chair.
Senator Howe.
Thank you, sir.
Next item on the agenda is Senate File 161. Senator Peterson. Senator
Chair,
Peterson.
Thank you, Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to share with this issue with you that we're hoping to try and correct This issue was first raised to me as a city council member, as I've served on the city council in St. Cloud, and was brought to my attention by our public utilities director, the operator that runs our wastewater treatment plant in St. Cloud, which is a regional facility. We have five different cities that are serviced by that facility. And if you live in a community or have constituents that are served by a wastewater treatment plant, this is a bill that would prevent significant costs being added to the operation of those facilities. What this bill does is ask that directs the MPCA to move through a process that they have in statute to bring Wisconsin's guidelines for Lake Pepin in line with Minnesota's. Many of you know that two-thirds of the state drains into the Mississippi River and eventually into Lake Pepin, which is why you have a senator like me from St. Cloud worrying about the phosphorus levels in Lake Pepin. I'd like to point out as well, Senator Howe, who's the senator from Red Wing, also is a co-author on this bill representing that community where Lake Pepin is located, and in his support of this, in support of this bill. With relation to that, we have Elizabeth Wafel with the Greater Coalition of Minnesota Cities that would like to say a few words in directly to this bill before we would bring up those that might speak in opposition to it as well.
Ms. Wafel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Elizabeth Wafel, and I am a lobbyist with the firm of Flaherty & Hood. I am speaking today on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities in support of Senate File 161. The Coalition is an organization of 77 cities throughout Greater Minnesota that are united to advocate on issues of common concern. As Senator Peterson mentioned, this bill is about a looming conflict that may impact our cities. Why our cities care specifically is, as mentioned, many of them operate wastewater treatment facilities. And anytime there are changes in water regulations, one of the first places that I would say kind of gets the hit is the wastewater treatments because they're large point sources. The looming conflict we're worried about is the difference between two standards. Last fall, Wisconsin adopted their phosphorus standards for the rivers. Their rivers flow into Lake Pepin, as do many of Minnesota rivers. Their standard is on phosphorus is at 100 u-grams per liter, and it's what is called a year-round standard. It means the same standard applies the entire year round. Minnesota is actually in the process of a three-year revision of their phosphorus standards for rivers. And we think that the approach that they're taking is a more sound and scientifically based approach. What's been done on this is sort of modeling the effects of phosphorus going into these rivers, and they've come up with a what is called a summer-only standard. It would apply during the months that are most affected from June through September. The challenge is when you have two standards like this that apply to the same body of water, the states either have to resolve it or the higher standard applies. One thing I want to make clear here is that our wastewater facilities are controlling for phosphorus, and they will control for phosphorus, you know, regardless of what happens. I don't want anyone to suggest that by somehow passing this that we're not going to be controlling for phosphorus, but it's a question of how much and to what extent. We think that the standard that the MPCA is driving towards is more scientifically sound. Because it applies during the summer season and it focuses on actual LJ growth. We have informally surveyed our different members throughout the state about what would happen if this were to change. And, you know, you've got some of your facilities that are a little bit newer. For them, it would be several hundred thousand dollars additional in maintenance operation costs per year. For other ones, it's additional capital costs in millions of dollars per year. You know, ultimately, these added costs would be passed along to taxpayers and businesses. We support clean water. Again, we see waters as one of the we see our wastewater treatment facilities as one of the first lines of defenses, but we really need to have sort of a balanced approach. We think this bill supports it, and that's why we're testifying today in favor of the bill.
Senator Peterson, have we done any fiscal? Is there going to be any fiscal impact to this?
I would say no. We have not seen a fiscal note. I know we did. We have requested ones for all the bills. So if we don't have one, I would say that there's not, unless some of the other you have one there.
I see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there is not. You know, again, the goal of this is to really head something off. You know, in the previous hearings, we've had I would call expert testimony from the public utilities director in St. Cloud and the mayor, as well, who will be directly asked to implement such rules if this would move forward. And they just unfortunately were not able to be here on such short notice. You know, our hope would be that we would make a motion to move this back to Environment and Finance. They've asked for it back. And for further review at that committee as well. So I think you should be have some confidence in knowing that your environment committee does want to see this again, and we've agreed to take it back there.
Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Wafel, let me ask if I understand this. You indicated that the wastewater facilities are treated for phosphorus right now.
Right.
And that's not going to change.
Right.
So this bill would allow us to move closer to a Wisconsin standard.
No, we're trying to avoid the Wisconsin standard. That we're trying to keep things, I don't want to say status quo, because things are always continuing to move in a direction. But the Wisconsin standard right now is year-round, and it doesn't consider the actual impact of the LJ growth. That's a standard our cities have told us, and they've given us numbers, would be extremely difficult for them to meet. And so we're trying to avoid that standard. The MPCA has to formally adopt what they're moving towards, which is a summer-only standard. And, again, we're just worried about that looming conflict between the two. We actually, given the choice between the two standards, we're much more in favor of the Minnesota one. We're worried about the conflict that might arise in Lake Pepin.
Okay. And Mr.
Senator Cohen.
That's a lower standard because it's a summer-only standard and not a year-round standard. Is that correct? Am I understand that correctly?
Ms. Waffle.
Yes, Senator Cohen. It would. Well, it's a. I don't like to use the word lower because it's. I don't want to give the impression that that this would be environmentally unsound. It's focused on the actual impacts and when do you really have the impact on LJ growth, which is during the summer. And so it's you wouldn't be treating for the elevated levels during the winter.
Mr. Chair and Senator Cohen, I think
Senator Peterson, you'll
hear testimony from folks that do not like phosphorus. I don't think any of us do, but it is something that we have to deal with at a level in regard to what we think is safe for the environment. And obviously, you're going to hear different opinions about that. But you know, we also have an opinion from the wastewater treatment operators who test this water. Every day in regards to those processes, and they're confident that this is still going to allow them to meet the standard that should be acceptable to the residents in Minnesota.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Peterson. What do they do differently in terms of the year-round versus the summer? I mean, in terms of wastewater treatment, if they have things in place, the year-round standard would require more monitoring, I presume, which is an added cost. But if they're functioning at a certain by a certain plan, what's the purpose of having a winter standard?
Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Olson, I can try and relay what I've heard from our technical experts in previous hearings, and then I can let Ms. Wafel respond as well. I think the testing is correct, the amount of testing, but then the staff and the level of paperwork related to that, I think, is another concern that we've heard from the public utilities staff in the past. And again, you know, for whatever reason, the folks from these facilities are concerned because the process seems to be moving forward without a lot of consideration given to their input on this issue. And so we're simply trying to just head that off rather than let something get passed and have to come back and try and fix it in the future.
Thank you.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I was going to respond to the last thing that
Senator Peterson just said. I understand, though, that there's, you said the wastewater operators feel like they haven't had any input. But I understand that on this phosphorus standard, especially when it, as it relates to Lake Pepin's water quality issues, there's been a fairly lengthy and involved stakeholder process. Did they not participate in that, or they just didn't get the outcome that they desired, and so they're trying to seek this legislative change?
Senator, or Ms. Weifel?
Go ahead.
Okay, I think that they've had input on the TMDL. I think right now it is the worry is about this sort of looming conflict, which has not yet, if it's being addressed, they feel like they haven't seen that particular part. But I do think you are correct that as far as the TMDL process and the overall sort of phosphorus standard, they have been participating in that. It's this sort of specific looming conflict where they have the worries. And just one second comment on Senator Olson's statement or question about why the cost goes up. Part of that is also just the treatment costs that go into and again, I'm not a wastewater treatment operator, and we apologize that they weren't able to come down for this today. But part of that is, you know, they have to chemically treat and biologically treat it, and so there's more that goes into it. It's not simply monitoring it.
So, Mr.
Senator Olson.
So, Mr. Chairman, you're saying that they change their practices in the wintertime versus the summertime then?
Yeah, I mean, part of it is just more that you have to do when you're trying to get it down to that level. So it might be more chemicals, it might be more of the biological agents. And there's other, you know, different, again, I don't want to pretend to be an expert on this because I'm not. But there are changes that they have to make, you know, because rivers act differently and bodies of water act differently during the winter versus summer months due to flow. They're making adjustments all the time. That's why they test their effluent and they're making adjustments to that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Peters.
Mr. Chair, and to Senator Dibble, the best thing I can do maybe to explain that, too, is just bring up another example. If you live in a county that has on-site septic sewage treatment facilities or basically septic tanks, you may have heard from your county commissioners and your county environmental officers. They've been very... they've been really been challenged with the adoption of the 70-80 rules, and much of the input that they have tried to put into that process for whatever reason, I can't speak to all those. It created a significant amount of problems for county commissioners and county environmental staff to adopt these rules, and I think this is just another example where the constituents and some of those stakeholders are a little bit concerned about their issues not being addressed through the rulemaking process, similar to the 70-80 rules. You are seeing several bills on rules, that rulemaking process, that are moving through the legislature right now. And again, I would just ask that you please give our local municipalities a chance to head off this situation.
So, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble. So here the answer to my question is, despite participating in the stakeholder process, they didn't like the outcome, hence the bill we have in front of us. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Senator Wigger.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, Ms. Weifel and Senator Pearson, the Lake Pepin, as everybody knows, is a precious Minnesota resource. I think it has the highest concentration of eagles in the state, and I was listening just with interest several weeks ago. NPR, I believe, did an analysis about the future of Lake Pepin, and I believe the reporter indicated within the next 70 years or so, the sediment buildup the lake actually faces drying up. And so that was really at my attention. And I didn't know I'd be addressing it this session, so it's good that the issue is before us, but I'm wondering, is this the right remedy to address that concern? And Ms. Weifel, you mentioned the survey that was done. Specifically, what did the adjacent communities, Lake Pepin, have to say as a part of that survey as it relates to this proposed remedy?
Ms. Weifel.
Okay, we actually surveyed our wastewater treatment operators and to see what impact sort of the change in standard would have on them. It was not a survey of the communities with respect to Lake Pepin. There is a larger process that is going on called the Lake Pepin TMDL that is addressing more of the issues that you're getting at. So it wasn't. I would assume that the communities near Lake Pepin are weighing in on that TMDL, and we're not challenging what in this piece of legislation what's being done at the TMDL level.
So, Mr. Chair and Ms. Wiefel, Senator
Wigger,
yes.
Let us remember our jurisdiction here. It is on rulemaking and not environmental policy, and I believe they want this re-referred back to environment and natural resources. So in the questioning, just let's keep that in mind. Yep. Thank you, sir. Any further discussion? Any other testimony that we have on Senate file 161? Hearing none. Senator Daley?
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate...
Excuse me. Senator, I believe we have a gentleman coming up over here.
So, Mr. Chairman, while he's coming up...
Senator Olson?
You said it's here because of rulemaking, but I don't see any rulemaking in the first engrossment.
Mr. Bonner? Could you address that, please?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, on page 1, line 8, it refers to the agencies establishing a standard, and presumably the means they're going to use to adjust that standard would be through the rulemaking process.
Okay, thank you.
Please state your name.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Gary Botzik, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota Environmental Partnership. I serve as executive director of the Minnesota Conservation Federation. We're a member of MEP along with 79 other organizations. And I'll be brief today. We've got two other testifiers who I don't think are going to speak since this is going back to Environment Committee, which we didn't know that till today, and we appreciate that. You've had more discussion on this bill than I think that committee did already, so we appreciate it going back where it should be and needs further work. A couple of points. Senator Wiegert, I appreciate your point on Lake Pepin. We all saw that story. 70 years from now, we'll have enough dirt in Lake Pepin. We could build a bridge down there that crossed to Wisconsin, so... we're still around in 70 years, we'll have another option, and I hope we don't. Dredging is going on down there to keep those lanes open for barging right now, for commerce, so that's very important. And we're sending off good soils down the Mississippi, and that's not good. But to the point, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, phosphorus standards are very important. Clean Water Act in Minnesota, the Clean Water Act nationally, both somewhat under attack, but very integral to the environmental standards in this state, in this country. We have moved from burning rivers back in the 60s and 70s from point problems where industrial waste was deposited into the Ohio River and other rivers to many point sources. These wastewater treatment plants are indeed point sources compared to non-point, as you all know, as ag runoff, our lawns into Lake Minnetonka and other places. That's the non-point. I think we're all that far along. But we need to address both. Interestingly enough, 2008, and here goes my voice, so I'll have to quit. We passed the constitutional amendment for raising our sales tax. 64% of the Minnesotans voted for that. Key element to that, and I think the reason it passed was the clean water. 1/8 of those 3/8 of the cents is going to clean water. This money is being committed on a yearly basis, and you're going to see the bills coming through here in a couple of weeks, a couple of months, relating to clean water, point, non-point, PFA bonds for some of these things. We can deal with these problems that St. Cloud's got, Mankato's got. We need to make those facilities work to take phosphorus out, not to allow them to have dual standards or three-month standards. We need to have year-round standards. I talked to the PCA out in the hall before I came in. They talk to Wisconsin on a regular basis. I don't. Some of you, I know, Senator Cohen, you've been around here a long time and noticed 30-some years, and so have I. And we remember the Perpich when we were sued by Wisconsin for terrible wastewater treatment in this state. And we lost. Wisconsin beat us in federal district court. And we've since then done a terrific job of moving forward. And this is not moving forward, Mr. Chairman. We support the motion to move it back to committee. And we promise to work with the senator and the committee to get the problem resolved.
Mr. Chairman?
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Botzik. You just stated that there's a lot of sediment flowing down and filling in that area, and I presume in that sediment is a fair amount of phosphorus.
Correct, Madam Chair and Mr. Chairman. Yes, indeed.
That's the challenge, I think, that the Lake Pepin area would have with the TMDL. are they supposed to solve the whole problem that is being shipped to them down the river? Or how, what kinds of efforts are being made to assure that everybody is carrying that responsibility and doing their part and not necessarily dumping it all here in Lake Pepin for the communities around there? You can understand why they would have some concern about having having to have a standard that that is having to deal with the whole thing rather than that being shared. Or do you know what the process or what's happening with the TMDL process in relation to this area?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, I do. Yes, there is a big TMDL project or process around Lake Pepin. It's identifying the sources of that sediment and what's in that sediment. It is phosphorus. It's other nutrients that are coming from our wastewater treatment plants, that are coming from our runoff from farms, from our lawns, et cetera. And those, it's kind of like a business plan. They're going to look at that business plan and say, identify the problem or the problems, and then put together a business plan that addresses key elements of that problem. And then we will implement through the Clean Water Act and the legacy money strategies with agriculture, with local governments, with industry, with the barge people, et cetera, to better use that river for business as well as for pleasure and recreation. Minnesota loves our waters. So I have to put that plug in. We want to keep them clean and make them cleaner.
So, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Bostic, is that looking at the river on a larger scale, or is it looking at Lake Pepin? Because if you're the sediment, if it's there, obviously, if they, are they going to attribute that all to the runoff around Lake Pepin, or is do you have a mechanism within that TMDL process of determining where else it might be coming from upriver so that's shared in that whole responsibility?
Mr. Voss.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, excuse me, the TMDL around Lake Pepin is the mother of TMDLs because well over half of our watersheds empty through the Mississippi River and the Minnesota rivers into Lake Pepin. So that is the one that we have to work the hardest on. That's going to be the most expensive. Yes, it's going to need to address how that sediment got there, and they'll be able to tell whether that came from Mankato or St. Cloud, literally. And we have to then back up the water, okay, back up the river, and find out ways to stop that from happening. And that's a multi-billion-dollar effort that we are going to be facing. We're fortunate to have clean water money, dedicated sales tax coming through on an annual basis now to at least allow us to begin that process.
Thank you.
Total maximum daily load.
Exactly.
I could see some people's eyes going every time we said TMDL. Torres Ray first and then.
Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is not an environment question, an environmental question. But Senator Peterson, I was wondering, I think I was curious about kind of the process of rulemaking and the process that you might have to engage in, especially because two states are coming together. They seem to have different standards. And I was wondering if you would be open to include perhaps some language in your bill that will give the opportunity to the committee to the community to provide input. It seems I heard that the waste treatment operators were surveyed, and Senator Howe, who represents this area, is a co-author. It seems that it would be appropriate to have some kind of a community input in the process, since you're going to be working with two states. It seems like we have a pretty good standard in Minnesota, and then I wonder if you will be open. Obviously, I will not be presenting that because I'm not in the Environment Committee, but I think it would be important that somehow, since you'll be working with two states, that you have enough support from your own state to move forward with recommendations that are really embraced by the community.
Mr. Bodern, in rulemaking, isn't there a public input time period on rulemaking?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Torres Ray, yes, there is provision for public comments, particularly when there's a hearing requested on the rule. In this instance, I think the agency staff may be most familiar with what has happened to date in the way of the opportunity for public comment.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I hope, Senator Peterson, that you promote that, because I think it will be helpful in moving forward with recommendations. So I think it'll be important to let the community know that this is something that you're pursuing.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Torres-Ray. I think we're committed to do that. I have a long relationship with Mr. Bostic and Ms. Wayful as well, and I think we're committed to try and work together on this. You can see in the bill, I think, starting on line 1.11 and moving through the end to 1.13, you know, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency right now does have a provision in statute that allows them to move forward when there's a conflict between states, and that's part of what this bill does. It simply asks the MPCA to move through that process, and if the process doesn't work out the way those operators like, then you know that's part of the situation. There is that for whatever reason, and I'm not sure of the reasons why. We have been unwilling to move through that process, but the process is there in the Clean Water Act for two states to try and solve these discrepancies, and that's one thing we'd like them to do. So.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair. Part of the point that I was going to make was illuminated by Senator Olson's question about, you know, so what is the area that we're talking about? Lake Pepin catches the water from over half the state, and kind of is the expression in one spot of our overarching overall water quality challenges that confront us. And of course, the citizens decided to put some money on the table to address that fairly definitively over the coming years. And as such, I'm concerned about this bill kind of moving us in another direction. So as such, I don't know if this bill is going to emerge again, you know, on the floor in an omnibus bill or someplace where I have an additional opportunity to vote on it. So I'd like to request a roll call vote so at least my vote can be recorded on this matter.
All right. Senator Dibble has requested a roll call vote. Any other testimony? Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one comment, and I hope I'm saying your right name right, Mr. Botzig, is that right? But myself and Senator Peterson and Senator Carlson for sure are in the Environment Committee, and I would just have to say I think we reviewed it thoroughly there, and you said we didn't. And we said that we would be willing to take it back there to make sure we thoroughly vetted this bill. And so I just want to bring clarification. I felt like that was not fair.
Mr. Chairman and Senator, I apologize. You did due diligence, and I'm glad it's going back so you can do some more review.
Any other testimony that we have? We have another gentleman. Please come forward and state your name. Please state your name.
My name is Daryl Gerber. I'm a program coordinator with Clean Water Action in Minnesota. And thank you, committee and chair and committee. Clean Water Action is a environmental organization with nearly 90,000 members in the state. And I'd like to just say a few additional points that Mr. Botzig didn't bring up in opposition to this bill. And I kind of like to touch a little bit on the process that there's some questions have actually alluded to. And what we generally deal with is looking at two things on the standard. So the question is really comes down to how clean is clean. And that is based upon what the water is supposed to be used for, what the designated uses are for it, and relies on scientific information of just how clean does the water need to be able to meet those uses. The thing is it doesn't include how difficult or expensive it is to meet that standard. That comes later on in the process, a part of the process that we have not really actually gotten to yet with Lake Pepin, and that's the part of the TMDL process that really the total maximum daily load that looks at where is the pollution coming from, how much does it need to be, kind of what's the diet it needs to be put on, and then figure out how do we actually meet that diet. And the folks that are proposing this bill are kind of trying to merge all those together before we've even really gone all the way through it. And we see this really as kind of a premature bill. I mean, there's a lot of input and stakeholder process that has happened, but there's a lot more to go. And, we're really looking at this of conflating those, that the standard really should not be taking into account how hard it is to meet it. That comes in later when we actually figure out how that is going to be done.
Any questions of Mr. Gerber? Thank you very much, sir. Any further testimony? Senator Daley.
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate File 161 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Environment and Natural Resources Committee.
Senator Daley moves that Senate File 161 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. Please take the roll.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson. Yeah,
before, I think that, you know, our action is based on the fact that there will require some rule changes, and I think this bill is perfectly appropriate. There may be disagreement on the position that is taken, but I think we're doing the right thing in sending it back to Environment to make that determination, and also to, you know, pay some attention to what the status of that TMDL process is doing. So I just wanted to make that clear.
Thank you. Senator Lilly?
Aye.
Excuse me. She'll. I thought you wanted to make comment, Senator. Will the secretary take the roll?
He was so anxious to vote for the bill, he just.
Senator Carlson?
Aye.
Senator Cohen?
No.
Senator Daley?
Yes.
Senator Dibble?
No.
Senator Gazalka?
Yes.
Senator Goodwin?
No.
Senator Lilly?
Yes.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Ortman?
Yes.
Senator Thompson?
Yes.
Senator Torres-Wright?
No.
Senator Weaker?
No.
Chairman Perry?
Yes.
Now, you can't count Lilies twice.
The two of us.
There were 8 yeas, 5 nays. The bill will be passes and will be re-referred to Environment, and thank you, Senator. Next item on the agenda is, Senate File. There must be something going around with voices here today. Senate File 196, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill has a couple sections to it. The first one is, in summary, we've heard a lot about the last several years in terms of trying to streamline the rules that we have relating to water. And you can see in the second section of this, really starting on line 1.3, we're seeking to try and streamline those state agencies that work and do inspections relating to water, including the Department of Natural Resources, the Pollution Control Agency, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, Environment or Quality Board, the Department of Health, and the Department of Agriculture. What this bill would ask us to support is simply putting a moratorium on rulemaking, on new rules only, moving forward for 2 years, and then commission this study that you see would ask the Department of Administration to work with representatives from those agencies I just mentioned in order to try and streamline this process. I was not able to, on such short notice, get all the people that have testified on this previously in the past, but we'll have some information here from Ms. Renette here shortly. The purpose of this would be to just ask for the moratorium and then ask those 5 agencies to work together and come up with a process where maybe we could have 1 or 2. You know, I'd like to present the idea that in my view, this bill is already somewhat of a compromise. For example, the city of St. Cloud, where I'm from, we have a full-time staff person that works on nothing but stormwater and water rules within the city limits of St. Cloud. So whenever there's a construction project, depending on what the applications are and the that need to be filed for that particular job, not only will we have those state agencies showing up on the job, but we'd also have a full-time staff member from the city of St. Cloud showing up on the job or on the project. And then we've had testimony from people in the past that have talked to in upwards of 8 or 10 agencies that if you throw in the federal agencies that show up on a project needing to address some type of rule relating to water. And so that's what this bill is really seeks to do, in the words of Commissioner Austin from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. We've seen him several times in the Environmental Committee. He talks about trying to move our environmental process up to the speed of commerce, and I think this bill would help do that if we can get these rules streamlined and maybe even have one agency working on implementing these rules potentially. With me today I have Ms. Lisa Frenette that would like to speak in favor of this bill as well. So.
Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Lisa Frenette. I'm with Frenette Legislative Advisors, and I'm representing the Builders Association of Minnesota on this bill. And what we're trying to do is exactly what Senator Peterson has talked about. There's when you take stormwater, for example, that Senator Peterson had just referenced, we have four different agencies that are promulgating rules on stormwater, and they don't generally work together, and they're not consistent with each other. And it causes it causes problems out on the field for contractors and developers when they're trying to get a project done. They're trying to do the right job with the project, and you have different sets of agencies or people or permits that you have to get in order to get the project moving. I can also use a more local government example in terms of the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District. You've got four sets of permits in the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District for stormwater. You've got the state MPDS permit, you've got a county permit, a city permit, and then you've got the Watershed Creek permit. We don't aim to stop all rulemaking as time goes on. What we'd like to do is slow things down, look at where the redundancies and the duplications are within all the agencies and what's happening on a state and local level. The bill also does not require any, if you'll notice, I forgot my part of the bill, I'm sorry if you don't mind, sir, that unless required by federal law or rule, no agency shall adopt rules related to the water quality or water resources. We don't aim to stop federal mandates that we can't stop right now. Those can continue to move forward. We just want to slow things down, take a good look at it, figure out what agencies should be participating in what issues, and move forward.
Any questions? Senator Cohen?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure if this is directed at Senator Peterson or Ms. Frenette, but putting aside the issue of whether or not there ought to be more streamlining of the process, why are we adding, I think, is it 2.693 full-time equivalents out of the general fund to state government to do this?
Senator Peterson.
Yep, I think if you're referring to the fiscal note that came back, relates to the admin department and the organization that might need to be done there. We would argue, and I think I'll allow Ms. Frenette to comment as well, but the cost savings by suspending the rulemaking authority is going to far outweigh the cost that is being demonstrated on this fiscal note from there were six different agencies that responded to this fiscal note. If we would ask them to stop any of the new rulemaking authority, it's going to more than pay for what this fiscal note is showing.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Cohen,
just suggest that that's not reflected in the note, what the note says. And obviously, an author can work with an agency to try to revise a fiscal note. What this note says is that we're going to add more people to state employment, and that may or may not be a good idea, but I think that goes counter to some of the rhetoric I've heard around the building over the last few weeks.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Peterson.
Yep. No, I think I'm not sure we have the same frustration with this fiscal note, but I, you know, on a number of the bills I've presented, being a new senator here, I do have frustration with the fiscal note because, you know, clearly it takes staff time to do things within an agency, but who gets to decide what the priorities for those agencies are? Because we know that those people aren't going to be laid off. And you'll hear from agencies that adamantly oppose this. I've had this conversation with the Department of Natural Resources, and they're not going to be laying anybody off because they're not going through a rulemaking process. But I'd like to see a way, well, let's set this as a priority. let's have the commissioner set this up as a priority so we have our agencies work on streamlining as a priority rather than having them continue to do what they have been doing and move their activities around, because we're going to have those costs of that staff no matter what. And I understand that this cost is associated, but they're going to be working on something. They're not going to be laid off if there's nothing to do. So,
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Peterson, this is long overdue, and I appreciate your work on this. This is not an easy thing to write up and to promote. I had some similar frustrations reading the fiscal note, because I think that when I looked at what the costs are for, it's not for the moratorium. Surely there would be a savings for all the agencies that would no longer be engaged in rulemaking, and for any of their employees that would be no longer engaged in rulemaking activities for those 2 years of the moratorium. It was 2 years, correct?
Correct.
But the costs often show up with the costs of the study and the work to be done. And I wanted to point out a couple of things I thought were interesting in your bill. In Section 2B, you talk about identifying current rules. Surely they should already know what the current rules are. Under Section B1.1, the statutory authority, I sure hope they know what the statutory authority is. Little 4, the relationship of the rule to other local, state, and federal rules. Sure hope they already know that, and they don't need to hire some new employees to figure that out. Number 3, identify inconsistencies and redundancies between local, state, and federal rules. I think they already have the responsibility to do that. And so I could go on. I evaluate current responsibilities of the agencies. I think they already know those things. And so I don't mean to be critical of your bill. I'm suggesting that this should not be cost intensive at all to do what we already expect these employees to be doing. And so I would ask whoever prepared this fiscal note to go back and say, wait a minute, much of these tasks are already their responsibilities. I thought some of the keys here that were really interesting were, let's see, B4 on line 2.7, identify means to coordinate rulemaking and implementation. I could see that that might be new, that has not been done before. Or 5, identify a rule assessment and evaluation process. Those things might warrant something new that has not been done before. But either it might be in the drafting of the bill, Senator Peterson, you might be able to go back and work with these fiscal note preparers to say, these are already your responsibilities, folks. Let's go back and talk about what's new here. And then talk about redirecting the people that won't be engaged during this moratorium period to redirect them in here. And there shouldn't be any cost at all to doing what we already have a responsibility to do. So I'm very supportive of your bill. I think you have the crux of a really important issue here and that you're addressing it, and I'm a big supporter. So anything I can do to help you, Senator Peterson, I hope you'll call on me.
Thank you, Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Peterson, I understand what you're trying to do here, but as Senator Ortman just said, if there's so many of these things should be or are being done, so there's only a few extra things that you're asking to have done here that's not already being done, then why do we need 2 years, a moratorium, to do this? Why couldn't you, why put a moratorium on it at all? Why not just say, get these agencies together and make them study the issues?
Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Goodwin, I appreciate those comments, and I think we've already shared with the agencies that we would be willing to shorten that if we get the work done. But we wanted to put a time frame out there so that everybody knew how much time we had to work on this. We already have after our first hearing, sent a note out to all these agencies that were affected, and I think you'll hear from some of them today again, and asking them for a number of things in terms of which rules that they have going on right now, what would they foresee happening in the near future. And we're willing to actually exempt certain rules. I mean, and I would agree, there's probably rules surrounding for those that serve on the Environment Committee and others that have heard about aquatic invasive species. I know, which is one of the concerns of the DNR. You know, we are not opposed to stopping rulemaking that are going to protect our lakes from these invasive species. Then that is a rulemaking process we might want to exempt. And we did give the agencies, I think it was 3 weeks, they have until the end of next week to try and get those things back to us, if I recall the deadline correctly. And so we're still, I've got information, I think, back from two of them already in regard to some of those issues that they're concerned about, and we are working to try and address their concerns the best we can, Senator Goodwin.
Senator
Chair,
Goodwin.
Thank you. And Senator Peterson, I think if you really want to push them forward, you wouldn't have a two-year moratorium. That's quite a long time for the number of things here that, according to Senator Ortman, they should be able to do. I frankly just think this is bad public policy, and I also think it's a little bit of micromanaging of the governor's administration, and perhaps I'd like to ask the representative from the Business Builders Association if you've had a conversation with the governor's office about this particular bill.
Ms. Frenette, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Senator Goodwin, I have not had a direct conversation with the governor's office at this point, but I have let Will Seufert know that we had a bill coming forward, and I'm waiting to speak with him. Last time I talked to him, he had a lot of agency stuff going on in terms of getting used to what was happening, and he asked me to wait to talk with him.
Well, Mr. Chair, and
excuse me. Senator Goodwin, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, and Senator Peterson, I think that would be your first place that you should go, quite frankly. And I think the governor has expressed an interest in making sure that we streamline things for businesses. So unless you've already heard that he's not willing to do some streamlining within these agencies, that would be my first thing. Mr. Chair, I think I'd like to ask for a roll call vote on this.
Roll call has been asked for, will be granted. Senator Peterson, is it not also true that you're requesting that this be referred to Environment and Natural Resources?
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senators. I was going to point that out, that it would be going back to that committee as well. And, you know, the only other thought I had relating to Senator Goodwin's question is that, another reason for the 2 years is simply just to allow the legislature to act. I think we all know that these legislative sessions go by pretty fast, and this is a priority for our office, and we got going on it as quick as we can, and here we are, I think 80 some days from the end of session, and we're well on the way of making some compromise. And I do share Senator Goodwin's opinion about the governor's office. Boy, if he'd come out with an executive order relating to this, I think I would be tickled and I would welcome that. So,
Senator Olson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just reading the fiscal note, and it's easy to see why we've got a problem. On page 9, the MPCA has implemented numerous surface and groundwater-related rules. These are contained in 20 separate chapters of Minnesota Rule, covering more than 700 pages of rule language. Then they've got some five active rulemaking things, and if you examine those, perhaps there are some that could be exempted. The operator, the wastewater treatment plant operator certification rules, and state revolving fund rules might not be affected. But there are some others that probably should be put on hold while there's some coordination being done and straightens out. They say it's going to take a quarter of a FTE just to evaluate their own. And another one and a half to, they thought they could absorb that one, but they need another one and a half to carry off the rest of it. I didn't notice as specific statements in some of the other agencies in terms of how much rulemaking how much overlap that there is. But I think this is absolutely needed. And if you are, I don't know if this was the plan to send this back to Environment too, but from a standpoint of rulemaking, I think that is a if you have it short, people can just write it out and therefore not do anything. I think that you've got an appropriate time, and I think that it is needed if we're ever going to get a handle on some of these things, because we're making it just impossible. I listen to people talking not just about this kind of thing, but they're getting to the point where they absolutely hate government, because they don't, you never know if we get by 15 minutes in a day without breaking some rule out there. And it's just, it gets frustrating. And I think this is an area, I appreciate your willingness to tackle that, and I think that we need a coherent. It doesn't mean that we don't want good things happening for the environment and to protect it. But this is, you've uncovered, I think, a challenge that needs to be addressed, and I commend you for doing it. So I urge your support of this recommendation to send it back to the Environment Committee.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, are we going to hear from other testifiers?
I was just going to ask that.
Okay, I can suspend until we hear more testimony.
All right,
thanks.
Any further testifiers that we have? Senate File 196. Please come forward and state your name.
Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. My name is Kirk Kadelka. I'm the Legislative Director for the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. We do have some concerns with the first portion of the bill on the rule moratoriums on the studies. We're neutral on that part of the bill. Some of the items or concerns with the moratorium is, number one, it prevents our agencies from adopting rules to address emerging and emergency issues that come up. It's hard to exempt something that we're not aware of still on the horizon, which we may need to react to, whether it be a substance that's found and we need to create a rule or a standard to adequately deal with that. As noted in the fiscal note, there are five rulemakings currently underway that this rule would seek to put a moratorium on. One is a water quality trading rule. Second is, as mentioned, is the wastewater treatment operator training provisions we're looking at. Also, PFA state revolving fund, anti-degradation water quality rules, and then our triennial water quality standards. The last two may be exempt under the federal exemption that was added to the Bill and Environment Committee. However, under the federal water regulations, there really isn't always that one-to-one connect where it says do this specific piece. It's a larger authority to keep our waters in high quality, and there isn't necessarily that connection, so we're a little concerned on that. Number three, I think there's an assumption that all rules are controversial and costly and burdensome to regulated parties. And there's a number of them in our five that we're moving forward with where that's not the case. Number one being the wastewater operators training, where we'll be providing relief to cities as technology has advanced and folks are more acquainted with the technology. We'll be able to allow to reduce the requirements on cities and save them dollars. Also, the water quality trading process will allow for industry in impaired areas to better react and allow for some type of regulatory relief in meeting our needs to keep the waters in pristine conditions. Number four is we believe it jeopardizes our standing with the EPA in certain parts and our being able to follow the Clean Water Act. Currently, the EPA does have the ability, if we don't follow through with the delegated powers that it has given us to follow through on the Clean Water Act, to take the permitting and other parts responsibilities to their offices in Chicago. We've also seen in other states where if we do not move forward with our standards that need to be updated periodically, EPA stepping in and placing their own standards in the place. Florida is one example. And then last item just to highlight is Minnesota does have one of the more intensive rulemaking processes in the nation already that does require for the state to create a statement of need and reasonableness to help justify why we are doing what we propose to do, includes public involvement, and also includes upfront involvement allowed through the LCC process for the legislature to be involved so that if there is some concern on the way that the agencies are moving forward, the legislative bodies also have a route to become involved.
Any questions for Mr. Kadelka? Senator Goodwin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if you were talking about the rules that are currently in play or being put together that this bill would then prohibit, correct? Do you know or have any idea what has been spent on the rules that are currently in the process and when You named a couple. I don't know if that's it, all there is, but if there's any more than that, and what money we're taxpayers' money we'd be wasting if we stopped this process partway through. How far are we into the process of the current rules?
Mr. Kadelka.
Chair and committee members, we are starting to put together the information on that as Senator Peterson has requested. I don't have those dollars and what we've done already on pre-publication costs. We are putting together as requested dollars that could be deferred to a later date if this moratorium were to be put in place, because there are some behind-the-scenes work that'll still need to be done before then. If the moratorium does move forward, we will still have to do a number of these rules. It's just the cost is deferred to a later date.
Senator Peterson. Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To follow up on that, again, I think we've tried to make clear that this would not stop any rules making that's currently going right now. It just wouldn't allow them to be adopted until the moratorium was lifted. So the rulemaking process can continue and that work can continue. It's just that they wouldn't be able to adopt it. I think we understand that there's a process in place for some, and they would be allowed to continue to move forward. So,
Senator Olson.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the comments from the PCA, and I know this is a complicated business with the whole rulemaking process, but I think that there probably could be some more work of putting a framework around what it is that we need to need to control that you would put the moratorium on, whether it's you've just stated that some of the things that are going forward right now would be okay, but I think that some of the things that you're expecting to be part of the study, it wouldn't hurt for the legislature to take a close look at and tighten that up before going forward with the moratorium. That's just a suggestion that I would have. If committee members can take that time and work through this with the stakeholders, because I still think your overall objective of trying to get some better coordination across these agencies is critical, especially when we have things that are contradictory and virtually impossible to reconcile. That does not help us look good or others that we're working with. And I'm not saying that in critical. We've created all of the boxes or silos or whatever label you want to put on it, and with the responsibilities and the statute. And so part of this is our problem that has been created, and we ought to be I think that's what we've committed to, and I think everybody's been talking about that. How can we streamline, be more effective, more efficient, not lose sight of the goals that we have for the environment and other aspects of public responsibility? But I think that that can be remedied as this gets another look before it is, in fact, attempted to be passed into law.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've never been on the Environment Committee, and this may seem kind of far out there, but I'm not sure it's such a bad thing necessarily to have the PCA acting while we are unable to act. I'm not sure that being a delegated authority is all that important to me. I mean, it may be to others. I don't know, understand that issue so well to say that I think we should always be the delegated authority, and I'm not sure what the expense is for having created this delegated authority relationship. I know that counties can do it as well, act as delegated authorities for the state, and that is the acceptance of a financial burden to take different standards, and I'm not sure we need all these different levels of folks working on these standards. So that's not a very convincing argument for me. It may be for others in this committee. A question, though, for our council. To the extent that Senator Peterson might not be able to eliminate all the costs associated with the study, would it be an appropriate use of legacy funds, since this is for the sole purpose, really, of protecting the environment through rulemaking? Would a study and the cost of the study associated for that potentially be used or included in our legacy funding?
Mr. Botter.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, that is really outside my area of expertise, so I don't think I want to step into an opinion there, but it's certainly something we could explore and give you a response on.
It may be a very interesting alternative if general fund dollars aren't available, Senator Peterson, to go look for them in another way, but I think this is a really important study that we need to make time and money for if necessary.
Thank you.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Ortman, you get to go tangle with the Lazard Council on that, then.
Yikes.
Thanks. Mr. Chair, are we going to hear from anyone else? Do we know any other agencies? Or?
Are there any other testifiers? All right.
I was going to offer a couple amendments, so I was going to wait until we're done with the testimony. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Please state your name.
My name is Julie Blackburn. I'm the Assistant Director for the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources, and I'm here just to talk about the moratorium as far as our rules are concerned, and I have spoken with Senator Peterson about it as well as the House main author, Representative Beard. We have only a couple of rules that we're working on at Bowser, and I think maybe they need to be excluded from the purview of this because they're about how we grant our cost share programs to soil and water conservation districts. We actually have even developed right now, we've already developed our SONAR, our Statement of Need and Reasonableness, and it's to streamline our grant management program for the cost share program, which that's the program that all of our soil and water conservation districts use when they're making their contracts with landowners to put cost share best management practices on the ground. And if you look at our draft rule, which is on our website, it actually eliminates a significant portion of the bill. It's all been stricken a huge portion of the rule in order to streamline our processes. So what we're trying to do is look at a rule that's been in place for about a decade now and make it much more efficient for soil and water conservation districts, and as well as provide for some more flexibility with the new clean water funds that have been going out. So we're asking for a little bit of flexibility, possibly an amendment which would exclude the cost share rule from that, which is an administrative rule. It's not a regulatory rule. As well as our RIM program, there were significant statute changes that the legislature made 2 years ago to our RIM statute or RIM rule in order to make it more efficient and effective. And so those two rules are put together, and we would like to have those relieved from the moratorium. And the third rule, which is the metro area water management planning, which is again, it's on our website. The goal of that is to become much more efficient and effective on doing local resource management planning in the metropolitan area. So those three are non-regulatory, and we would like to work with the author to get them excluded from the moratorium.
Senator Olson.
I think he's got an amendment he'd like to offer, and
Senator,
I'll let him go first, and then I do have an amendment.
Oh, thanks, Senator. Thanks, Mr. Chair. My first amendment is it's just an oral amendment, but I do have an A3 amendment, and I don't know if you've seen it, Mr. Chair. I mean, it's fine to pass it around now, and I certainly would like the author to see it, to have a little time to.
The A3 you're offering now?
No, I'm not offering that now. I'm going to offer that next, but okay. Yeah, sure, would welcome. Yeah, and then we'll go to Senator Olson in between, I suspect. My first amendment won't be successful, and she's got a different take on what I'm offering. So, Mr. Chair, we certainly have heard some testimony from folks about the concerns about the moratorium. I know some folks want to maybe go after some of the specific rules that are under consideration with a little bit more specificity. But I think, Senator Peterson, I kind of like your study. I think it's interesting. I'm worried about the fiscal note and, all these new FTEs and this $500,000. But Senator Ortman's going to go find some money for you for that. So it might be a good thing. But I think the moratorium is a bit of a heavy hammer. And so to that end, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to offer an amendment to delete Section 1 and ask for a roll call vote.
Senator Dibble moves to delete Section 1. Is there any discussion? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I guess at this point I'd have to urge you not to support this amendment if you're comfortable with that, mainly because I think, clearly we have demonstrated, and I think if you ask the agencies, I think we've been very reasonable with the deadline that we've asked them to get information back to us. I think we've been very reasonable in terms of being clear that we would be willing to exempt certain rules if we would determine that we would agree with those. And so I think we are committed to trying to work with the agencies the best we can to move in this direction. And I think you heard Ms. Fermette again commit to get back to the governor's office to see where they're at on it. And so I would have to urge you to not support this one at this point.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you. Members, I hope you'll vote against the Dibble Amendment. I'm a big fan of Senator Dibble's. However, I think the idea of having the moratorium is absolutely essential for the success of this bill. We need to put on hold any more rules that only confuse the issues even further. And we need to recognize it's time to put this process on hold, make sure that anything else we do makes sense in the overall scheme and that we actually have a plan for how we're going to make all of these rules and permitting requirements all make some sense. So I hope you'll vote against Senator Dibble's amendment. It is, in my view, the heart of this bill.
All right, we are discussing Senator Dibble's oral motion to delete Section 1. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Wigger.
Mr. Chair, I believe Senator Goodwin had her hand before me.
Thank you.
Senator Goodwin.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm speaking in support of Senator Dibble's amendment. I think our waterways are way too important to the state to just blankly put a moratorium on them for. I'm concerned that there's some rules out there currently that are being drafted that maybe one particular profession doesn't want, and that's maybe what spurred this bill. But whatever it is, I think that it's just too important, our waterways, to take any chances like this of just having a blanket moratorium on whatever we have out there that is under rules right now and whatever we may have of an important need for in the future. So I'm speaking in favor, and I hope you support Senator Dibble's amendment.
Senator Wigger.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I speak in favor of the amendment. I support Section 2 of the bill for the study. I wish we could get an executive order that might do that, and I believe there's bipartisan agreement on that. But on Section 1 for a moratorium, I don't think it's responsible for us to play roulette with the water in our state. Clean water quality is a core value for Minnesotans. And there's a story behind each rule. It was many of these, I assume, were initiated during Governor Pawlenty's administration. I've never intervened on any particular rule. I will say I did chair the Ramsey Soil and Water Conservation District and am very aware of the need to have increased cooperation and coordination, which Section 2 addresses. But I don't think we know of the potential unintended consequences to Minnesotans by putting a moratorium on. I think it helps accelerate the process for efficiency by looking at what we can do to streamline, but to just put everything on hold could put people at risk. I'm not willing to play roulette with that.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Peterson, I hope you hear the message that you will have bipartisan support for the study, for creating efficiency in government and bringing these ideas forward. I absolutely support that as well. I do not believe that it is necessary to have a moratorium. I think that you heard from the agency that this is problematic for them, especially if in 2 years they are not going to be able to really act on some rulemaking for some emergency situations. It is problematic. So you have the opportunity right now to move forward with bipartisan support to do something that it is very needed in the state of Minnesota, which is to create efficiency, to bring these agencies together to work on doing business better. You may not if you put a moratorium, so I just want that for the record.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just do have to take exception with my colleague, Senator Wigger. There's nothing in here that stops the use of current rules. And 700 pages in 20 separate chapters in one agency alone, they're still operative. This was a moratorium on adding additional until we can get our act together. And so I think that that is appropriate, and I would urge support of keeping the that rule making moratorium in place.
We're ready for a vote here on the Dibble Amendment to delete Section 1, the oral motion. Roll call has been requested. Secretary, please take the roll.
Senator Carlson?
No.
Senator Cohen?
Yes.
Senator Daley?
No.
Senator Dibble?
Yes.
Senator Gazelka?
No.
Senator Goodwin?
Yes.
Senator Lilly?
No.
Senator Olson?
No.
Senator Ortman?
No.
Senator Thompson?
No.
Senator Torres Wright?
Yes.
Senator Wieger?
Yes.
Chairman Perry?
No. Being that there were 8 no's and 5 yeas, the motion does not prevail. Senator Olson.
Thank you. I do have an amendment, I believe, that Mr. Bodern has that would exempt the rulemaking rules that are in process at this time from this moratorium.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, I think the amendment I prepared had to do with the effective date for this bill. And one thing I wanted to point out is that since there's no appropriation in it, the default effective date supplied in law for a bill like this would be August 1st of 2011 if it were enacted. Section 1 contains a moratorium that begins July 1st, 2011. So just from a technical perspective, if the committee wishes to do that, then you'll need an effective date to supply a July 1st, 2011 date. And you can do that by adding orally a new Section 3 with a head note effective date that states Sections 1 and 2 are effective July 1st, 2011.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Bodern, I'm not quite tracking with you as to whether that addresses my intent.
Mr. Chairman, okay, Senator Olson.
If the rulemaking process is going on, this would keep that intact for those rules.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, there'd be a couple of ways you could deal with that. One would be that you could say for any rule where an agency has published notice of intent to adopt a rule, they may conclude the rulemaking on that. You could exempt those rules from the application of Section 1.
And why don't we put a date in there for that? Maybe there are a number that were stated, and I think they were ones that I used as illustrations both from PCA and the other testifier that were ones that really aren't they're kind of an ongoing, the licensure or the certification of the wastewater treatment operators, that kind of thing. I mentioned those that could certainly be outside of that purview. Where can we set a particular date by which they would have to go to the be published, in other words, ready to go into the official rulemaking process that would accommodate that?
Senator Peterson.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and Senator Olson, we'd be happy if it's acceptable to you. I think I haven't seen a copy of that here, but if you would allow us to work with you before we get it, the next hearing in front of Environment and Finance to address that. I mean, I think that's our intent, to work with the agencies to find rules that we think should be an exempt, and those are all great examples that you gave, and I think we'd like to try and address your concerns so you can support it between now and in the Environment and Finance Committee.
Well, Mr. Chair and
Senator Olson.
Senator Peterson, the rulemaking part of it is the jurisdiction of this committee, so I really think that it would be better if we could find a way to deal with that here before sending it back to Environment. I've served on it many, many years, but I'm not on that committee any longer. But it was I think there should be a way that we could accommodate what is going forward. And if the date isn't quite right and you find that to be the case when you're in the next committee, you can always amend that date. That rules that have been published or ready to go by such and such a date, whether it's August 1st or September or whatever of this year. would be exempt from it, from the moratorium.
Senator Peterson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, I guess I would prefer to see it in writing and see what we're actually talking about here. Because again, I think we're trying to work towards the same thing. I think there's rules that we all can agree need to be exempt from the moratorium, and the best way to define those, whether they be through some type of use of the word emergency or relating to specific areas, I think we want to try and address those through the revisor's office and our legal counsel. But I guess Senator Olson, you know, I would have to urge members not to support it, I guess, until I get a chance to see it in writing.
Mr. Chairman, is Mr. Bodern?
I guess I just to weigh in just a little bit here, I guess what I'm hearing, Senator Olson, is that you would like to find a way to exempt those rules that are in the process of being developed currently. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yes, and I think that at a critical stage, can be discussed ones, and there's a lot of preliminary stuff, but if they're close to the rulemaking process, if we're concerned about the not having it be a cost that has been incurred, and they could, in fact, go forward.
Mr. Bonner.
And if we didn't hit the right date, that could be changed, but I would like to get that principle in there, and I think that is a responsible action on the part of this committee if the members agree.
Mr. Bonner, do you have?
Mr. Chairman, there are a couple of points in the rulemaking or stages in the rulemaking process that you could name, and you could fix a date to those. The one, I think, what most people would consider a threshold for commencing rulemaking would be when the agency publishes a notice of intent to adopt rules under Chapter 14, and there are two specific sections that allow them to do that. And you could even, the selection of a date there is more a matter of judgment. One option would be to leave that open until July 1st, or to somehow backdate it, maybe January 1st of this year. If it were January 1st of this year, it's highly unlikely any agency would begin rulemaking and complete it before the July 1st ending date. I would need a few minutes to put that in writing, but that would be a few sentences.
Mr. Chair holds the gavel of time on the committee.
Senator Dibble, did you still have an amendment?
Yeah, we could work on my amendment for
a
minute
or
two.
How about if we worked on Senator Dibble's amendment and give you some time, Mr. Bonner? All right.
Well, I don't know how long mine's going to take. We'll see.
Senator Dibble.
So, Mr. Chair, I offer the A3 amendment. I request a roll call as well.
Roll call has been requested and granted.
Thank you, Mr.
On the A3.
Thanks. Kind of supports the comments by Senator Torres-Ray that, and my earlier comments, Senator Peterson, that the study actually is probably a good idea, with the caveat it's expensive, and I don't know if it belongs in the Department of Administration, but maybe we can work, other than maybe the EQB might be well-suited because that's in administration, and then they do this sort of larger coordinated look at environmental policy across agencies, so the UQB might be a good place to do that within admin. We generally agree, it's always a good idea to stop, take a look, and see how we can do things better cross-functionally, making sure we're taking a good measure of exactly what we're doing, how we're doing it, and who we're doing it to. This just adds an element that would come forward in that report that we would receive on January 15th next year, which summarizes those rules, those 700 pages, that are cited on lines 1.19 through 22. But looking at what is the underlying reason we have those rules in terms of benefit to public health, water quality, stopping, preventing impairments, ground water, drinking water, source protection, providing some level of measure of certainty and guidance to local governments, something we didn't really discuss in the previous bill, habitat, tourism, et cetera, applying with federal laws, making sure that we're able to administer our water regs locally rather than deferring to an obscure agency in Chicago who most of the time around here people don't like the EPA in Chicago because they come in and tell us what to do and how to do it and who to do it to and other benefits. So, Mr. Chair, it's just simply asking that we have a well-rounded picture and analysis of the rules along with all the other elements that are called for in Senator Peterson's bill.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble on one line 12. Could you be accused of having a commercial installed in statues? Promoting a particular product?
Yeah, I hear a little theme song in my ear right now. That particular commercial is frowned upon these days, though.
Members, I am not to push anything along here, but we still have one more person to testify, and we still have one more bill to hear yet today. So, Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I would like to speak against the A3 amendment. It's a very nice vision, and if we could afford to do all this assessing past and potential future benefits and summarize it, it would be one thing, but we really can't afford that. And the extensive nature of this will just sink this bill in the water in Minnesota. I mean, this is incredibly expensive to do. And so I think it's already tough, the fiscal note. I think this just makes it impossible. And so I hope members will oppose it and keep to Senator Peterson's vision here.
Senator Dibble.
Just, Mr. Chair, just to respond directly, my intent is not to sink the bill because, I like the study. But I think it's a little slanted now. I think we need, some more well-rounded information that we're going to receive next January. To an earlier argument that was made criticizing the fiscal note, a lot of this stuff is already available. A lot of this information is already available in the files, the agencies prepare as they're launching a rulemaking. They have to cite a lot of these anticipated benefits as they start the process of rulemaking. Likewise, with some of the factors, and it's only asking that this be brought forward in a report that informs our policymaking decisions that we're going to make next January in response, to receiving this report. Likewise, a lot of these other factors don't need to be reinvented. The agencies simply need to crack the files and just kind of transmit in a summary format what's already available at their fingertips.
No
further argument against the size of the fiscal note, by the way, that Mr. Peterson is contending with.
Right, thank you. Being there's no further discussion.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to hear the author's opinion about this amendment, if I may.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Torres-Rey. I would be opposed to Senator Dibble's amendment.
Secretary will take the roll call.
Senator Carlson?
No.
Senator Cohen?
Yes.
Senator Daley?
No.
Senator Dibble?
Yes.
Senator Gazelka?
No.
Senator Goodwin?
Yes.
Senator DeLilly?
No.
Senator Olson?
No.
Senator Ortman?
No.
Senator Thompson?
No.
Senator Torres-Rey?
Yes.
Senator Uyghur?
Yes.
Chairman Perry?
No. Being there 8 nays and 5 yeas, the motion or the amendment does not prevail. Mr. Bodern, how are you doing or maybe before we do that, there is one other person that would like to testify. Let's do that and give Mr. Bodern just a couple of more moments. Please state your name for the record.
Chair, Senators, my name is Trevor Russell. I'm Watershed Program Director with Friends of the Mississippi River. FMR is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization based in the Twin Cities. Our mission is to protect, preserve, and enhance the Mississippi River and its values for all Minnesotans. I am here to give testimony on a couple different components of the bill, and I do recall, Mr. Chair, that we are not the Environment and Natural Resources
Thank
Policy
you.
Committee, so I won't belabor some of the points there, but our reading of the bill is really there's two different bills here. The first is that there is a water rules study process, and the second is there is a water rules moratorium. And our group is sort of split because we like one part of the bill and we don't like the other. So if you'll humor me, I know we've discussed a lot of this already, and we've had 3 8-5 votes. So I suspect this bill will advance out of this committee on an 8-5 line either way. But I did want to address a couple of the issues that we saw in the bill. And in essence, this bill would prohibit water quality or water resources rules by the DNR, PCA, Bowser, EQB, Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and of Health until 2013, and the Department of Administration would conduct a study process. That portion of the bill we actually like, and it parallels quite closely. I told the Environment and Natural Resources Committee, I suspect they, being it's their jurisdiction, had read and fully memorized the Minnesota Water Sustainability Framework and all of its 160 pages of recommendations. I don't suspect this committee has done the same, but I will turn your attention to recommendation J1A. In this document, if someone wants to take a look at it. What that does is proposes a one-time Minnesota Water Congress that would achieve many of the goals of this legislation, basically bringing together a broad group of stakeholders to address exactly what the first portion of this bill does, identify overlaps, inconsistencies, other components of existing water quality permits, regulations, processes, and identify mechanisms for advancing a more rapid, equitable, fair, transparent, clear, predictable water quality permitting process. This does it, but it has a slightly different path, and then it's not asking the Department of Administration to do it. And with all due respect to the Department of Administration, I'm not sure that that is the body that is best suited to conduct a sort of broad public stakeholder involvement process in identifying exactly where the issues are. Some of the testimony we heard earlier identified inconsistencies between, say, state rule, county, watershed, and city stormwater permits. Well, this moratorium and this rulemaking process wouldn't necessarily get at those inconsistencies because we'd need stakeholders from a broad level of government units, from developers, from hunting and fishing, from recreation folks, from consultants, from engineers, wastewater treatment plant staff, all to be operating together if we're going to find those inconsistencies or those inefficiencies in the law and correct them. If we're just asking the Department of Administration alone to do this, just with the state agencies, we miss the depth of the opportunities we have to increase our efficiency and our effectiveness in water quality law. And so my recommendation would be, can we amend this to include something along the lines of the University of Minnesota Water Resources Center, explicitly include local governments to be involved in the process, developer interests, recreation interests, local community governments. There are a lot of different interests that are involved in water quality policy. And if we hit the brakes and say, you state guys figure it out, then we're missing a lot of the folks that are underneath. So that'd be one component of my recommendation to this committee would be it's a sound idea, and we like it, and we support it, and I would love to be a part of it in any way I can. But I'm not sure that Department of Administration is quite the best way to go about it. The second component is in addition to the is in relation to the room moratorium, and I'll bring up just five quick points and then get out of your guys' way because I know the clock is ticking here. First of all, we don't support the bill as written because it addresses basically blocking existing rulemaking processes that are underway that were developed by the Pliny administration. There's a couple components here. The first, we've already invested public resources and public support for new rules that we as Minnesotans decided we wanted, and this would cut those rules off at the knees. So it would represent a wasted investment, depending on whatever language Mr. Botten comes up with in terms of an effective date for that moratorium. The second component is that a lot of these rules relate to new efficiencies in government, right? So it's not necessarily a new rule that says you can't or you shall or you must. Some of these rules, for example, the wastewater treatment plant licensing rule, are designed explicitly to leverage new efficiencies in the water rulemaking process and in that arena. The PCA raised three of them. Well, four if you take that permitting one, which I think you all already want to exempt. Triennial standards, the EPA, you have to exempt that. By the way, the state of Minnesota, it's not a choice. It's a federal rule. We are the delegated implementor of the Clean Water Act. The Clean Water Act is, in essence, 50 state acts. Each state is delegated with authority for enforcing that rule. It is not an option for the state to decide to be the delegated authority. They must comply, and if they don't comply, the EPA can and has and is right now in the process of revoking that state delegation. So we don't want to go there. No one wants our wastewater treatment plant permit staff to go through Lisa Jackson or EPA Region 5. That's bad news for everybody. So We've talked about exempting rules that we think we might have to do in order to comply with the US EPA. The trouble is, it's not what we think, it's what Lisa Jackson thinks. Because we are the designated entity charged with implementing the Clean Water Act, it is up to the EPA to decide what we can and must do. Triennial reviews, for example, have a certain time limit that they have to be done by. So there's no gray area. It's got to get done. You have to do it. Something like a wastewater or water quality trading permit or an anti-degradation rule that must be revised but don't have an explicit key for time, it's up to the EPA's determination as to whether or not we would be in compliance with the Clean Water Act by continuing to advance those rules or not. So it's really not this committee's decision. It's a federal-level decision because they've delegated us that authority. So the concern is you don't necessarily know which ones to exempt and which not to exempt. It's up to the EPA to make that designation. She's probably not going to fly here and testify in the Environment and Natural Resources Committee next week or whenever we have this hearing. So we're operating in a legal gray area that could result in the EPA taking delegated authority back from some components of our water quality rules in Minnesota. I won't belabor that point anymore, but I just want to bring to that attention that we don't have crystal clarity on that issue right now. A couple other things. We talked about sort of government accountability. We want our agencies to be responsive to the needs of the public in Minnesota. This body meets 4 or 5 months a year. Water quality issues are 12 months a year. So, for example, we found out in late summer 3 or 4 years ago that we had contaminants polluting drinking water in the East Metro area. The Department of Health had to act immediately to assign new health risk limits to put protections on public drinking water. If the governor had to call a special session to bring this body back in to allow a specific exemption for a heretofore unknown emergency in the State Department of Health drinking water rules, that is politically untenable and an embarrassment for the state of Minnesota. I don't think we want to end up in that position, so I'd encourage this group at the very least to please exempt Department of Health from any rulemaking moratoriums. We're talking about drinking water contamination. That's probably not a game that we want to play. Lastly, I'll go through a couple other issues. First, there's some unintended consequences that have been raised already in this conversation. One of those that hasn't been raised is that local units of government are responsible for meeting their own Clean Water Act responsibilities. So, for example, a watershed district still has to comply and meet the goals of a TMDL, a total maximum daily load, pollution reduction diet for a water body, if you will. I'm an expert in it, and I still mess it up when I say it sometimes. Those local units of government are still responsible for meeting those goals, and they often rely on state rulemaking processes to achieve those goals. So we'll pass a state rule. It'll be implemented at the local watershed district level. That allows that watershed district, for example, to meet its Clean Water Act requirements. Absent a state rule, would all of the watershed districts, 26 of them in the metro area, generate their own new rules? And then instead of having a clear playing field and a moratorium on new rules and a time to take some deep breaths and get some clarity as to different levels of regulation and how they affect new development and commerce, we would inadvertently do the opposite. We would create a robust sort of rulemaking process at multiple different levels of government that would in fact confuse the issue and really have a counterproductive outcome to what we all agree is a fine goal here. So I'm concerned about the potential that local units of government might, in absence of popular state rules that they feel they need to have done in order for them to comply with their Clean Water Act responsibilities, just create their own new rules. But those local units of government may not be working in cooperation or the same level of communication, and so we might have a patchwork of different, say, stormwater rules at different watershed districts like we have now. That problem might just be getting worse. So there is a little bit of a concern there, and it does trouble me that we might lose some of the predictability and transparency and certainty that developers need at the local level in order to comply with these rules. And then the last thing is that there is a good piece of legislation that we all like, which is taking a deep breath and figuring out how we can coordinate multiple different levels of government and multiple different agency water quality rules paired with the bill that may be read by the governor as limiting his executive authority and thus may or may not receive a signature. So are we tying an anchor to an otherwise good idea and ensuring that it won't get passed? And so one option would be to split the two bills. That was tried and failed in this committee. There are other options. You're all smarter than I am. You could figure out an approach to this. But aside from some legal issues, some potential public health crises, potentially engineering a whole set of inconsistent local government regulations in the absence of state regulations, We also might be doing ourselves a disservice by denying the citizens of Minnesota an opportunity to proceed along the lines of Minnesota Water Quality Congress by attaching this to a bill that won't receive a signature.
Thank you, Mr. Russell. Make sure you sign the sign-in sheet for Mr. Bodner. Do we have some language? Excuse me a minute, Mr. Bodner. Are you?
Mr. Chairman, there's a handwritten document that's been distributed that contains, I think, the language Senator Olson was looking for.
Mr. Right. Chairman, I just make a couple of responses to the
Senator Olson. We're pushing time, and we have Senator, and I understand, and we have to remember this is going back, being re-referred.
Yes, but I just would say the Department of Administration does have facilitators, professional facilitators there to do that. There may be some reconstruction as to whether they're responsible for the whole study or not, but. And I would assume that the health department does have rules for dealing with. Do they have every time we have an emergency or another kind of disaster, they've got to come up and make new rules? That whole business kind of gets a little scary to me. Is that we're a nation of laws. Now rules can have the force and effect of law, but we went through an era in this body of trying to pull back and take some responsibility for setting policy that was clear enough. That you didn't always have to have rules, or that the rules could be very very directly related to the statutory authorities, because we'd gotten a little loose in that department. And so when I hear you saying just every time you turn around, it's the rulemaking authority that's going to be exercised, which has the force and effect of law, and it's totally out of control of those who are elected to do something, it makes me a bit nervous. So I just, having said that, I would like to offer the amendment that Mr. Bodner has that puts in place, and I'm not sure which of the rules this might, if it excludes any of those that are in process, but I would, putting that in place, I think it does show some recognition of this on our part, and I think there's room for the Natural Resources Committee, Environment and Natural Resources, if they're going to be looking at this again, to maybe, if they want to carve out, make some changes to that, I think that's perfectly in order.
Right.
So I would offer the whatever number we want to apply to it.
The handwritten amendment.
The Senator Olson amendment, which would move to amend Senate File 196 as follows, page 1 after line 10. We would insert C. This section does not apply to proposed agency rules listed in a notice of intent to adopt rules published under Minnesota Statute Chapter 14 before January 1st, 2011. Senator Peterson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and you know, again, unfortunately, I'll have to urge members not to support this amendment. I understand what Senator Olson is trying to do, but there's some things we're concerned about, rushing rules to meet deadlines and that type of thing. So I would urge members to not support this amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
I'd like to request a roll call vote on this.
Thank you very much, Senator Dibble. There will be a roll call. Any further discussion? If not, Secretary, please take the roll.
Mr. Chairman, before you do that, I'm trying to understand. I think,
Senator Olson.
You are against any of the ones that are in process being allowed to go forward?
No,
Senator Peterson.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, and Senator Olson. Right now, I think the bill allows those rules to continue to move forward as is. You know, that's been discussed significantly. It just doesn't allow them to be adopted. And as I've stated, we're more than willing to list rules that certain agencies feel need to be adopted within that moratorium. And I think we're really ready to try and exempt those. But this would allow, the bill does allow people to keep working on the rules. So
you're, if they
Senator
are,
Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Peterson. You believe that if they are in whatever stage they're in now, they could go forward, even into the official rulemaking process, except
Senator,
that they couldn't be adopted.
Senator
Is that
Peterson.
What you really mean?
Yes, right now, well, any, I guess I'm not sure what particular stage you're talking about, but any rulemaking process that's in process right now, I would say yes, can move forward. It just can't be adopted under the moratorium.
Excuse, Mr. Chair?
Senator Olson, are you?
Well, if that is, I'm not sure.
I would think, Senator Olson.
If that addresses the concerns that have been addressed, If you believe that is the case, I would withdraw the amendment. But I think that that is, you talk about incurring costs, you're at a stage of adding costs that are go beyond even what you're talking about. I think that there needs to be, this date might not be the right one. And that's why I was suggesting that if you examine this further, you may want to change the date. But I think that there is a factor in terms of that process that ought to be honored, depending on how far it's gone down that line. So I would encourage you not to oppose this amendment, but to work with it and improve it to fit the needs that are there.
Mr. Bonner, could I ask you a question? If in fact this were to move forward and be re-referred, if the Environment and Natural Resources Committee would change anything in reference to the rulemaking, it would kick it right back to this committee, would it not?
Mr. Chairman, there's some judgment involved in that determination, and if it's simply exempting certain rules from the application of the bill that are related to particular environmental concerns, it's really debatable because it's not providing new rulemaking authority. You could make the case that it wouldn't have to come back here after the committee's already reviewed it and gone over the general provisions that are in the bill.
And Mr. Chairman, I think Senator that decision Olson. Would be in your hands. If you saw that that bill had been changed such that you wanted to hear it again, you asked for it. I don't think it would necessarily be an automatic.
Well, I believe what I'm hearing here is that they do want to have some discussion with the agencies on some of these rules that they're concerned about. And if that's the case, that would happen in Environment. They would get that point, and then it would come back to this committee.
I don't believe it's necessarily new authority, Mr. Chairman.
Understandable.
But if it is significant, then yes.
Understand. Senator Thompson first, and then Orban.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Bodern, as I read this, I assume the word adopt means approve, put into effect. So the only thing the moratorium does is prevent a rule from being adopted / becoming effective. So all the other processes can remain the same. It's just the gavel won't officially drop and say, okay, rule adopted. It now applies here in the state of Minnesota. Am I correct on that, or is that wrong?
Mr. Bodern.
Mr. Chairman and Senator, there is a slight distinction there. I think the rule could have a prospective effective date. So in other words, the agency could take a rule all the way through the process and put in an effective date after that time. But here it says the agency can't adopt rules before June 30th, 2013. So even if it had a prospective effective date, it would be prohibited from doing that. I think there's been some discussion about moving through the process and adopting the rule. The other thing I want to point out is that within a certain time frame, there is a statute in law that requires within 180 days after the administrative law judge has reviewed the final proposed rule and given it the ALJ's approval, if the agency does not adopt the rule, then it's got to redo the entire process. So that situation isn't really addressed here, but it's possible, if any rulemaking is completed before then, if the agency failed to adopt the rule, it'd have to repeat the process.
I see. Thank you, Mr. Bodern.
Senator Artman.
Mr. Chair, if I understand, any federal requirements for rulemaking would still go forward or not, and are not covered by this bill. And my suggestion then, if that's the case, to the author would be, in the Environment Committee, identify the ones that you think should go forward and exempt them from this bill, and then go forward with the date as is. That would be one way to work through this, identify the ones that you do think make some sense to continue on. But I support the author on this. I think there's some work to be done on this, Senator Olson, and so I defer to either of the two of you. But I think there is an exemption for the federal. He can work on some of the specific ones that really warrant continuation during the process of the moratorium, and that may be one way to address it.
Well, I will withdraw the amendment. I think the message is here, and
all right,
they can go forward.
Senator Olson withdraws her amendment.
They had six votes, huh?
Mr. Chair, I would move the bill.
Senator Ortman moves the bill. glasses in here. Excuse me. Senator Ortman moves that Senate File 196 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. All those in
Senator Goodwin.
Senator Goodwin.
I just want to make sure everybody understands, and what I heard Mr. Bodern say was that any rules that are currently being worked on and maybe go through the approval process will be have to start all over again in 2 years, because that'll be too much time according to current statute that it has to, once it's gone through the Court of Appeals. So I think it's wise for everybody to understand that all these rules and process that's been happening so far on any rules that are currently being promulgated will be canceled, and they will have to start all over again in 2 years. That's my understanding of it. Is that correct or incorrect?
Mr. Bodern.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Goodwin, there are two possibilities that would avoid that result. The first would be the rulemaking takes so long that it is not completed and the ALJ's report is not issued until sometime after June 30th, 2013. And the second would be the agency completes the rulemaking but receives the ALJ's report within 180 days of the June 30th, 2013 deadline here. The agency would then be able to adopt the rule July 1st, 2013, without running into a problem with Section 14.19. So, but otherwise true for a bill within those time frames.
Thank you.
Rule, excuse me.
Secretary will take the roll.
Senator Carlson?
Yes.
Senator Cohen?
No.
Senator Daley?
Yes.
Senator Dibble?
No.
Senator Gazalka?
Yes.
Senator Goodwin?
No.
Senator Lilly?
Yes.
Senator Ortman?
Yes.
Senator Thompson?
Yes.
Senator Torres Ray?
No.
Senator Wieger?
No.
Chairman Perry?
Yes. Being there were seven yeses and five noes, Senate File 196 prevails and will be sent to the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. We will be hearing Senator Magnus's bill, the final item on the agenda, Senate File 449. Senator Magnus. I understand some members might have to leave. If so, if you let us know where you're going to be at, we can come and grab you before the vote. Senator Magnus.
Hello, Mr. Chairman and members. Is this the state governor? Is this Environment Committee? Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Back on the veterans issues, Chairman, Senate File 499. Pretty straightforward bill. We have several. I know we have lots of people that wanted to testify initially, Mr. Chairman, but we're recognizing the time we're in. As many of you know, there's a federal program called the GI Bill. In fact, some of in the legislature may have used the GI Bill. It's a federal benefit that is earned by folks that serve in the military. It's a bit of a complicated bill. I can testify firsthand, Mr. Chairman and members, because I did use the GI Bill to get my undergraduate degree. There's a number of combat veterans returning to Minnesota, and as those of you who are familiar with this, there know the numbers are sizable. In 2008, the number was almost 3,000. 2009, about 3,000. In 2010, when our 34th Infantry Division, the Red Bulls, returned back, we're almost 5,200, and we anticipate this year would be about 3,000 coming back again, and more leaving. And Mr. Chairman and others, committee members, we want to remove the sunset provision that funds these college veterans affairs officers that assist our college folks. We anticipate there's nearly 12,000 students or people now attending that need to use this program. Again, it's a little complicated. These are non-traditional students as well. I think when I went out to visit the 34th Infantry Division in their training, I was told the average age was 34 years old of our Guard members. Nearly 40% were women. And so they're not traditional students. They're not the 18-year-old person coming in out of high school. They have different circumstances they're facing. So pretty straightforward bill, Mr. Chairman and members. I would ask that you act favorably on it. If I could get a motion to to bring the bill up and approve it, I would appreciate it, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Daley.
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate File 449 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Senator Daley makes the motion. Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, just a comment. Obviously, I support the bill and recognize the need to repeal the expiration date. But obviously, because there was an expiration, the FTEs are not counted in the ongoing budgets. We have to reappropriate the money for these FTEs, and a reasonable thing to do. But this just kind of, again, flies in the face of what we've been hearing. I think somebody had a bill, I'm not sure who it was, to reduce the workforce by 15%. And maybe we should just keep track of how many people we're going to be adding to the workforce and see how that juxtaposes against the 15%.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Magan.
If you look at the fiscal note, you see there's 13 FTEs. Is my understanding. We have testifiers here, too, Mr. Chairman. I'll turn it over to them in a second. But those are people that are currently working. I don't believe we're going to be hiring any new people. I understand Senator Cohen's concern. I sure wish I'd have heard this a few years ago. But anyway, we're not hiring any new people. It's almost $1 million, Mr. Chairman. There's no question. It costs some money. But again, we have a federal program. We need a minister. We need to get people back in the workforce to get them into good paying jobs, get them educated to help us as a state grow. Hopefully, they'll be able to get more incomes, Mr. Chairman and members, and contribute back to society and contribute into our general fund and help us down the road.
But, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
Let me just offer the clarification. I'm not suggesting, Senator Magnus, again, support the bill, and the bill is absolutely necessary. And you're correct. I'm not suggesting that these are new employees that will be hired. But in the presentation of the governor's budget, these employees were not included because of the expiration. So when you talk about the governor's budget being X number of dollars, and is that too much money or too little money, you would have to add these the continuation of these 13 employees on top of that. That was my point.
Right. I understand. Mr. Chairman, I have some testifiers, too. Don Pfeiffer's here to testify, if you would.
Sure, Senator. Please state your name.
Thank you.
I'm Don Pfeiffer. I'm the director of the Higher Education Veterans Program. It's a program of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and the subject of this bill today. First off, thank you for taking the extra time. It's very appreciative. We as veterans appreciate it tremendously. In 2006, a very bipartisan legislature passed the money and the set up the program. There was some expectations that it could end in 5 years. Obviously, we've seen nothing but an increase in need for services. I do have 12 coordinators that work across the state in addition to one administrative assistant. Those 12 coordinators are the heart and soul of our program. We succeed because they are out there working daily on the campuses with the students and potential students who are either veterans, service members, or their family members. We also have some great partnerships. We partnership very closely with the Guard. We are their training partner. We are authorized to go right on the drill floor and provide information about Guard education benefits as well as all the federal benefits. And then we partner with MinSCU as well as University of Minnesota. They provide us space on their campuses for for the 13 employees that we're talking about here. I'll just give you a quick information. With the federal GI Bill, which was mentioned by Senator Magnus, in 2006, there were about 5,000 Minnesotans using that bill or the various programs within the GI Bill. As of 2010, we're well over 12,000, 12,285 as of the end of December. So we see almost a threefold growth in the usage of the federal programs. But that does not talk about the state programs as well as the DOD programs that are funded through the military. We have veteran centers that we have established on campuses, both public and private. We started, there were three campuses that had some form of veterans programming going on in 2006. We are now up to 62 within the state of Minnesota. We've helped and assist campuses to have created 62 centers. New individuals coming into our program annually. In 2006, we had a little bit over 1,000 new individuals. That was only counted once that they'd come in. In 2010, we had almost 7,000 new people come into our program. And the 7,000 new people plus the returning students, we had over 57, almost 58,000 contacts at our centers in 2010, which was a 31% increase over the previous year. And by the way, in 2009, we had a 40-some percent increase over 2008. So we've seen just explosion in need for services. Now, the real highlight of this program is that looking at federal veterans, GI Bill funding, military affairs funding, which is DOD, and state veterans funding provided by the state of Minnesota. In 2006, we had roughly $50 million being provided to individuals in Minnesota to go to education. And in 2010, we had almost $97 million. We had almost a doubling in the number of dollars coming into Minnesota as a result of not only our efforts, but the efforts of other people as well. But we know that we played a significant role in making sure that individuals maximize their benefits wherever possible. And as Senator Magnus said, these programs are extremely complicated, and you can actually lose benefits if you do not make the right choices. We also created an electronic information site that has a worldwide impact right now. We are serving Minnesotans overseas. Matter of fact, from 421 cities overseas, from within the United States, not counting Minnesota, we served individuals from over 3,000 cities in Minnesota, in the nation, and in Minnesota alone, 241 cities. So we have literally a worldwide impact in serving our individuals, serving their country from Minnesota. With that, I know there are a lot of other speakers that would like to speak, and you're short of time, so I will turn.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you, Mr. Pfeiffer. Is there anybody else that would like to testify?
Yep.
Hi. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Dipper. I'm the Vice President of the Minnesota State College Student Association. We're the organization that represents the students of the two-year community technical colleges of the MinSU system. And with me today is Bill Johnson, a student at Hennepin Technical College and a Vietnam War veteran. First, I want to thank Senator Magnus for his work on this bill. When our students heard that this program would expire at the end of fiscal year 2012, they were very concerned. Even though only a fraction of our students are veterans, we all share a deep appreciation for the sacrifices our veterans have made. And it was once said that our veterans jump in line for a country, and they shouldn't have to wait in line to get an education. And it's with that spirit that our students have directed us to support the continuation of this very important program. You know, our veterans didn't give up on our country, and we really can't give up on them. And every veteran should have the chance to transition to a successful civilian life. And this program makes that possible for so many people. And nobody knows the struggles of a veteran like a veteran. And that's why this program works. The campus representatives are employees of the Department of Veteran Affairs and not employees of the college. So they know how to navigate the complex system of veterans benefits, and they can help out the students much better than our campus employees. And like I said, nobody knows the struggles of a veteran like a veteran. So with me today again is Bill Johnson. He's a Vietnam vet, and he works at the Veterans Center at Hennepin Tech, and he'll share with you why this program is important to him.
Senator Parity, Senator Ferry, distinguished members of the committee. My name is Bill Johnson. I'm the president of the Veterans Student Association at the Brooklyn Park campus of Hennepin Technical College. Like Jeff said, I also work in the Veterans Resource Center. I'm here today to talk about the necessity of keeping our regional coordinators, who are instrumental in helping our younger veterans understand the various options they have using the educational benefits They are entitled under the various chapters of the GI Bill. They serve as our experts, our teachers, and our advocates. The Veterans Administration's regulations are often difficult to understand, with some offering no real explanation on how the GI Bill claims are processed. I know for a fact I've worked with the for over a year on one issue. I still yet to understand it because there's nothing in writing. Our advisor, Ray Bone, was able to get some information and has been able to help a number of students who have had trouble with what we call short block courses at Hennepin Technical College, where they were denied benefits under basic allowance for housing. As student workers, Ray trains us on what advice to give to prospective students enrolling under the GI Bill. He helps us understand what benefits the various chapters offer and who qualifies for those benefits. It's a task that has to be repeated each year because we do graduate. At least that's our intention and our goal. Perhaps Ray's most important position is as an advocate. As a representative for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, I have witnessed many times the work of him as he helps veterans who have problems with their benefits. I know of one instance where there was a veteran who did not receive his basic allowance for housing for 3 months and was about to have him and his family with two small children evicted from their apartment. Ray was able to contact people in the American Legion who obtained temporary financial aid for the family, while at the same time he was able to work with the VA to get the matter straightened out. They also helped schools comply with state regulations dealing with delayed payments for the GI Bill. On a more pragmatic basis, having 13 regional coordinators serving over 50 colleges rather than having a person in each of the colleges performing the same function makes for a more efficient use of our taxpayer dollars. In conclusion, some may have asked, why is an old veteran like myself arguing for this, since my day has passed, to receive any benefits from the GI Bill? The answer is simple. Because of the GI Bill, I was able to make a better life for my family and myself. It was my opportunity to fulfill the American dream. This is something I want for our younger veterans. God bless you. God bless the great state of Minnesota. God bless America.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We have, as I see, a couple more testifiers.
Mr. Chairman, I know we're pressed for time, but it's important these folks talk.
Understand, Senator. Please state your name.
My name is Jason Johnson. I'm an Iraq War veteran, and I currently go to school at Dakota County Technical College. I actually was on active duty Army, and I moved back to Minnesota just to go to school. And without my original coordinator, I wouldn't be in school because the VA or the GI Bill is so complicated, and I deal with her every week on issues with the GI Bill because I am dealing with a traumatic brain injury, so you know things are very confusing as it is. And basically, without her being there at the school, I definitely would not be in school because it is such a complicated process, and she is a to the VA, you know, for on my behalf, you know, so I don't have to deal with all that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Other testifiers, please state your name.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Jonathan Bone. I represent the Minnesota State University Student Association. We are the seven state universities in MinSCU. I'll make this brief. Our students wholeheartedly support this program. The veterans on campus are an important part of the entire student body, not just the ones that are directly served by this program. And as important to it was important to our board, it's important to all of our students that this program continues. And I would like to touch quickly on Senator Cohen's point that, yes, we can repeal the sunset, but we do need to find the funding to maintain the program. The governor's budget did include $945,000 to continue the program. The original or the appropriations in the past years, I believe, have been $1,050,000. and that not all of that money has been spent. So the department came in with a little bit lower number this year at $945,000. But I just would like to, again, stress that we need to find the money to maintain this program. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Further testimony?
Hi, Mr. Chairman. My name is Lori Brook, and I'm a Becker County Veterans Service Officer. And just to let you know what this means to veterans in a community, in a county, Becker County is rural Minnesota. The coordinator is the number one referral I make outside of the VA. The federal dollars that it has brought into Becker County has greatly enhanced the ability for my veterans that have lost their jobs due to the economic downturn to be able to get new jobs, not lose their homes, and be able to support their families. The higher education representatives have the unique ability to speak three different languages, Minsku, VA, and student. I have the ability to speak VA language and benefits language. So between the two of us, we can provide those wraparound services in the community that allows our veterans to become and maintain that productive be that productive member of society. Without them, we are going to lose those federal dollars that come into a community like mine. And I don't know about you, but I would rather spend federal dollars than state dollars helping these people. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Further testimony.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Lieutenant Colonel Sandy Best with the Department of Military Affairs, and I'd like to make 3 points on, in support of this extension of the sunset, our removal of the sunset. First of all, we have a large number of service members that when they redeploy they want to return to school. It's been as high as 85%, and using the 1st Brigade, our largest deployment, there was roughly an estimated 75% of those people who used their educational benefits when they returned. Second, we do a lot of training to go to war to ready our people to go to war, but that there's a lot of training that's also required on the reintegration of these members as citizens in our communities. And the Veteran Service Centers have been very beneficial in assisting these members reintegrate to society and make their educational experiences very positive. Lastly, I'd like to say that our deployments continue with, and that means the need for these Veteran Service Centers continues. Later this year, we'll be closing in on almost 3,000 military members for deployment for the Minnesota National Guard. That would be even probably close to doubling that number when you look at the other reserve components and active duty members that come back to the state of Minnesota and use those educational benefits. It's a complex program, and the Veteran Service Centers are very critical to our military members. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Further testimony.
Mr. Chairman, Senators, my name is Stephen France. I'm with the Office of the Chancellor, Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and I have 3 very quick points to make, and the first one is that we speak Minsku. We don't speak VA, and it's a very complex program that our folks have to administer and have to work. Complexity is the first issue. The second issue is increase. We've had an increase of 40%. In fact, sir, it's 43.7% in veterans in only 2 years. The numbers are increasing dramatically. The complexity is increasing dramatically. And number 3, what the message is that I received from our campuses and that I'd like to bring to you today is these people are vitally important for our campuses. We desperately need them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further testimony?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Ralph Donay. I'm the chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council of Minnesota, and I'd like to just make a quick point here. The UVLC, the United Veterans Legislative Council, the Commander's Task Force, the County Veteran Service Officers, and the MAG group here at the Capitol all put this as one of the items that we really needed to move forward within the state this year. So it's not just one little group of people here trying to bring forward to you the issues involving this. It's the entire veterans community around the state. We're talking 400,000 plus people here that are behind this effort to keep this program going. I retired in the 90s, tried to go to St. Cloud State to school. Got such a hassle with trying to get into school and stuff. And as a 30-year retired Marine, I had some finances to back me up, so it wasn't a big thing. But it wasn't until the following fall that I could get things lined up to get back into school. We have these men and women coming back that want to get into school right away and get things going and to help support themselves with the GI money that, to me, is free money coming into Minnesota from the federal government to aid our state in our schools, in our housing, in food, everything else that the new GI Bill gives out. And remember, it includes the entire family now. It's not limited to just the service member. Their children, the wives, they're all eligible to use this new GI Bill. So I would ask you, please, to consider passing this on. It's a very important bill for the state of Minnesota. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, sir. Further testimony? All right. Thank you very much. Senator Daley renews his motion and moves that Senate File 449 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Wigger. Yes,
just very briefly, we all share in thanking the testifiers, but you know, on a personal note, I wanted to share my daughter, who was an Iraq vet. Among her duties was suicide intervention and that type of thing. So when she came back to Minnesota at Minnesota State University, Mankato, we know as a family and other military colleagues, there's a lot of issues you have to navigate. It's complex, the GI Bill. It's complex just reassimilating. And it turned out fine. In fact, my daughter was one of the first hires for this program. And she's now a social worker, but she was involved in establishing, I believe, about 8 of these centers in southeast Minnesota. And I want to compliment her supervisor, Mr. Pfeiffer, who is very, very talented. And from the heart, this is a very needed program.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you. One quick question, Mr. Chair, just for clarification. The rules bill that we passed last week, did that say that, is that at the committee level that we have to say where the money is going to come from when we're appropriating or planning to appropriate new money, or is that at the floor level?
Removed.